Is it the first time we've seen each other post-election? Yeah. Really?
Yep.
I guess we talked on the phone. Mm-hmm. But, happy post-election. I guess is it. Well, what better than a movie about the enslavement of an entire race of people and their ultimate liberation to really put things into perspective
for? We're still in the red, kind of.
We are, but that's okay, because I'm recording on this.
Oh, okay.
This doesn't matter.
That doesn't
this
matter.
This totally matters. Willow, are you ready to get biblical?
Always.
Let's get biblical, biblical. I wanna get biblical.
I like Bible movies like this, uh-huh. Mostly because I see them entirely from an outside perspective. Like, I don't have any connection to anything. I just got your text message. I don't have any.
Long time ago.
I don't have any connection to any of it, and I think the, like, history and stuff is neat.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's do it. Well, it's a musical, too. So.
Yeah, it's a musical. This is the ultimate Jewish movie. Oh, by the way, I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And
it's Del Toro time.
It's Del Toro time. We're back with the ecstasy of...
That just went full bright red while we were doing that.
Did you say woo? I thought you were going to say woo.
Woo!
We're back with the ecstasy of influence. This is The Prince of Egypt from 1990... What, seven? 1990... I can't see very well because my eyes are old. 1997, 1998, something like that. 1998? I want to say eight. Eight? 1998's The Prince of Egypt would not be holding the Blu-ray in your hand if it were not for the death of the president of the Walt Disney Studios in 1994. That's right. In 1994, the president of Walt Disney Studios was killed in a helicopter crash. Jeffrey Katzenberg, who was the chairman of Disney Studios, the Disney like movie studios, whatever you called it at the time, was like, all right, Michael Eisner's going to make me the president of Disney Studios.
I shouldn't die in a helicopter crash while that's going on.
Don't die in a helicopter crash. Michael Eisner was the CEO. And instead, Michael Eisner calls Jeffrey Katzenberg into his office and hands him his resignation papers. Not Michael Eisner's resignation papers. Jeffrey Katzenberg's resignation papers, and says, you're going to resign now. Katzenberg thought he was going to be in charge of Disney Animation, which he was his dream. And instead, he was given his walking papers. He resigns in 1994, commiserates with two of his best friends, the heads of Amblin Entertainment, Steven Spielberg and David Geffen. The most powerful director in Hollywood, the most powerful guy in the music industry, and they decide to start their own production company. Let's start our own production company with our initials, SKG, Spielberg, Katzenberg, Geffen. We'll call it DreamWorks SKG, and they do. We were all excited. I was in college at the time. We were like, holy crap, Steven Spielberg's running his own studio? This is going to be rad. Their first movie was like some thriller with David Duchovny. It was the weirdest, like, fresh out of the gate, let's hit the ground running with the Duchovny thriller that nobody cared about.
I mean, yeah.
But while he was at Disney, Katzenberg had kept trying to get a Moses movie made. He wanted to make the Ten Commandments. Spielberg and Geffen were both like, you know what we should do? We really need to set ourselves apart. Let's make an animated motion picture that's unlike anything Disney's doing. Let's make a Moses movie. And Katzenberg was like, I'm right ahead of you. They jump on it. They work on this movie for like 5 years, 4 or 5 years. Brenda Chapman, Steve Hickner, and Simon Wells are the ultimate credited directors. Brenda Chapman, the first female director of an animated film made by a major animation studio. Mm-hmm. I think the director of like the Care Bears movie was a woman, but that was like not considered.
Nobody
like,
cares
nobody
bears.
Nobody cares bears. Even though the Care Bear movie.
Something.
Pretty good movie.
Something.
It's got an evil book. Evil book of spells.
The Care Bears extended universe is something.
We meet the Care Bear cousins in that movie.
Yeah.
But that's the one about the evil book of spells that's like trying to take over a boy's brain. There's also the one about the summer camp that with like the evil book or the evil twins. I can't remember. The Care Bears movies are rad. I highly recommend them.
They're
in any case.
Fun.
Also, a woman had directed one of the earliest animated motion pictures, but that was in the 1920s. It was, I think, at the time, a lost film. But this is the first time a woman was able to direct a major motion picture. Brenda Chapman would go on to be the woman who created what became the movie Brave.
Yeah.
And was fired by Pixar because Hugs-A-Lot Bear, the head of Pixar at the time, was a scumbag and didn't like women to direct. And they took away The Bear and the Bow from her, and it became Brave, directed by a man. But she is still a powerful filmmaker in her own right. Mm-hmm. So this movie was under production for a long time. It has a cast of thousands. They consulted with Jewish leaders, Christian leaders, Muslim leaders, all kinds of religious leaders to make sure they didn't offend anybody, which led to some strange casting choices ultimately in the end. But their big thing was, we want to tell the story of Moses from a Jewish perspective, so let's cast a bunch of white Gentiles, except for, I think, Jeff Goldblum's the only, like, actual Jew in the entire cast. I mean, when you cast Val Kilmer is probably the least Jewish person in the world, until the follow-up to this movie, the Joseph movie, which starred Ben Affleck, who is the least Jewish person in the history. Casting a Boston Catholic as Joseph was the wildest choice. Joseph should not have a Boston accent, but the vast Val Kilmer, who has a soothing voice, he's the most soothing Moses. This is. I mean, you've seen this movie? Have you seen this movie? You've never seen this movie.
I have seen clips of this movie.
Have you heard of Moses?
No, I have. Yeah, I've heard of Moses. I've read the story.
The founder of, I believe it's called henotheism. Not monotheism.
Mm-hmm.
It's the practice where you believe in a bunch of gods, but you only worship one. Mm-hmm. That was kind of early. The Yahweh cult, before it became what we know as Judaism, the Yahweh cult, the Judaism of the First Temple, believed in a bunch of gods. Everyone had their own gods. What they end up doing is they end up taking their god and putting him in a box, true story, and carrying him around in a box. And they're like, oh, we're just bringing our god everywhere, and now he's the god of your land. We have him literally in this box. Don't open it or your face will melt off, especially if you're a Nazi. So it's the story of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
If you they put their god in a box, they carry him around for 40 years, and they're like, we're just spreading our god everywhere. Forget your gods, don't worship your gods, worship our god. I went up on a mountain, he gave me these tablets. There's only a few rules you gotta follow. One of them is, don't have any other gods before this god. Eh? Pretty easy to follow. And then Judaism came along, and then Christianity came along, and then they showed this movie in churches to church groups, and like...
Churches have a very odd relationship with Christian media, or any kind of religious media. Like, Jesus Christ Superstar is done in churches all the time, and I'm like...
Yeah, I mean, Jesus Christ Superstar is a pretty... At the time it was created, it was pretty controversial, but now it's pretty reverent.
Yeah, it's a great musical. One of my favorite musicals.
Well, this movie is a musical. It's called Prince of Egypt.
Yeah, really?
The Prince of Egypt. Mm-hmm. It's on our list. Guillermo del Toro loves it. Why? We don't know. He's never talked about it publicly.
Guillermo del Toro, please give us words.
Why do you like Prince? I mean, I can figure it out. It's a beautiful movie to look at. It's about mythology. It's about complex characters. It's about Moses and Aaron as brothers. It's about Moses and Pharaoh as brothers. Spoilers, it's about the Passover, probably the greatest supernatural mythological event in the history of religion. Are you ready to get real physical?
What?
Are you ready to get biblical?
Yes.
We're going to actually go somewhere and watch this movie now.
We're going to leave this recording.
Yes, we're going to leave the recording. So you can look at my cuckoo book behind me. We will not be watching this.
Because I forgot my headphones.
Forgot your headphones. That's fine. You don't need to watch us watch this. I'm going to incorporate some clips from the movie into our discussion of it.
You need to incorporate the like meme that goes around online of he has bloods of thousands of children on his hands, and then the guy goes, slay, because he just got it off.
this movie is not, don't confuse this with the gay-coded DreamWorks movie, which is Road to El Dorado. Don't confuse it with Road to El Dorado. It is not Road to El Dorado.
It's not Road to El Dorado.
This is the least gay-coded of the DreamWorks movies. Funny thing, this movie was hailed at the time as a masterpiece of animation, and then they were completely undone when Katzenberg decides to get revenge on Michael Eisner a few years later by making a movie about how much Michael Eisner and Walt Disney World suck by making Shrek, which totally just changed the face of animation forever. And DreamWorks animation forever. They're still getting out from under it. They did How to Train Your Dragon. They did all the Guillermo del Toro stuff. I mean, DreamWorks did Trollhunters. They, I believe, did they have a hand in Pinocchio? Was that a DreamWorks? I can't remember now. But del Toro's worked with DreamWorks a lot. In any case, let's go watch. Stop looking at your phone.
I want to Google looking, the Pinocchio thing.
Stop looking at Pinocchio.
Pinocchio.
We already talked about Pinocchio. He's dead. We haven't thought about Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio since the day we sat down to watch it.
I think about that movie all the time.
I think about it not at all. Let's go watch The Prince of Egypt. Are you ready?
I want to find the information about Pinocchio. So give me one moment. It's important. Hello? Thank you. Doesn't say.
It doesn't say. Hold on.
I'm wearing my Howl's Moving Castle sweater.
You are.
And I also, I got...
Is Pinocchio a DreamWorks movie?
It's going to tell you about...
The other Pinocchio.
Well, yeah.
Wait, hold on. Is Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio a DreamWorks movie?
No.
It's not a DreamWorks movie.
I also have my Castle in the Sky necklace.
Hey! Castle in the Sky. Ecstasy of Influence. We know why Guillermo del Toro liked that one.
We do, and we've talked about it. It's a great movie. It's a great movie.
Listen to our episode on that. Let's go watch...
Let's go!
Le Prince d'Egypte.
Why French?
Because is there anything more French than...
Is there anything more French than what? Suffering?
Let's go!
Let's go!
Forget it.
The bit's dead.
And we're back!
And you are still very loud for some reason.
And we're back! Like the voice of God!
That was pretty cool.
Actually, the voice of God was pretty loud in the movie. I remembered the voice of God as being whispery.
It was for a bit, because it was whispering his name.
Starts out whispery.
And then it's just the talking guy.
And then it's just literally Val Kilmer just talking
to
Val
Kilmer. God in this movie is an eldritch entity.
God in this movie is scary as sin, which is fine because God is scary in the books of the books of the Hebrew Bible.
Yeah.
God is a force to be reckoned with. And, by the way, we just watched The Prince of Egypt.
Yeah.
Prince of Egypt.
Woo.
Thoughts?
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10? No notes?
No notes. A few notes.
Yeah.
But only because this is a family film and they can't do the whole story if they're trying to make this a family film.
10 out of 10, no notes from Willow. I have a lot of other problems with it. But
I'm sure there are a lot of problems that I don't know about because I don't know any of the context.
It's not even the way the story changes from the book in the Bible. I have a lot of issues. First, right out of the boat, I'm not a Stephen Schwartz fan. Mm-hmm. I don't like Stephen Schwartz's music. I found most of the music in this movie to be really bland and unmemorable. So that's my first big thing. I find I would rather have had it not be a musical just because I found every time the singing started, I just kind of like zoning out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a musical. I'm a musical person.
You have a theater degree.
I have a theater degree. I do love a good musical. But I've never been a Stephen Schwartz fan. I'm not. I don't like his style.
There was a lot of the music that I liked, but I liked the build up and the background pieces of the music, not so much the main singing.
There was some great chanting, the atmospheric stuff.
Yeah.
The Ten Plagues, the all of that.
The Bad Guy song.
The opening to the Bad Guy song, we're playing with the big boys now. It was really cool where they're naming all the gods.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go back. Let's begin at the beginning.
We can't do that. That's too far back.
Not even this movie begins at the beginning.
Nope.
Prince of Egypt. What's it about?
It is about Moses.
Moses, who, biblically speaking, was never a prince of Egypt. That's something made up for the movie.
Did Egypt have princes?
They did. I mean, more like they had Pharaoh. They had princes. I mean, you were essentially. But Moses never historically, even in the story in the Bible, never achieved that level. He was raised as part of Pharaoh's household, but the Bible doesn't go into anything about his relationship with brothers or anything. The Pharaoh is just pharaoh. There's no Ramesses, none of that. It's set in a completely different part of Egypt than this movie was. But the filmmakers were like, people want to see, they want to see pyramids, they want to see monuments.
Look, people have a very narrow view of what Egypt
is. Was.
For some reason, that we like to think of Egypt as the big, like, one thing. That, like, our version of Egypt was like 3,000 years
long. Oh, yeah,
long.
No.
Cleopatra lived closer to modern times than the creation of the pyramids.
Right, right. And Cleopatra, not Egyptian.
No.
Greek. That was after Greece took over Egypt and changed
what we
everything
think of,
about
what we think
Egypt.
Of as Egypt is a bunch of different dynasties.
Yeah, yeah. It was many different dynasties just over like many different centuries.
Rome.
Yes. So they set it in an Egypt that people are more historically familiar with. They beef up the role of Pharaoh's son, of Ramesses.
Yeah.
They beef up the... It's more about the relationship between Moses and his brother than it is about Moses and his relationship with the Hebrew people, really.
We don't get a lot of that.
No. I forgot that. I haven't seen this movie since it came out, but I am familiar with the story from the Bible. So the story of the Prince of Egypt tells the story of Moses from his birth up through the parting of the Red Sea, up through the beginning of the Exodus. So even though it says this is the story of the Exodus...
It's only the... Pre-Exodus.
It's only the preamble to the... I mean, it's the
start
Passover
of the
story.
Exodus,
it's the Passover story. Which
Is the rest of it super interesting, though?
The story of them in the wilderness?
I mean there's some interesting stuff that happens.
Yes, that's where you get the pillar of fire and the pillar of smoke, and you get the him going up Mount Sinai and getting the Ten Commandments. You get the golden calf. You get them starving in the wilderness. You get manna in the wilderness. You get Moses hitting the rock and making the water come out. You get God getting mad at Moses because he took the credit for the water coming out of the rock. You get Moses not making it to the promised land at the end of the day and dying and being buried. And that
this is a family film.
But I mean, okay. Did a bunch of children not die in this movie?
Yeah, but with family films, you can't end on like a down note.
But finding the promised land is still a high note.
Yeah,
like,
but
it's still a big deal.
The people who watch this movie as a family film don't care about the Hebrew people.
So they
care about Moses.
They do what they do in children's movies, which I've never been a fan of, which is let's start it off with a giant action sequence.
Yeah.
Let's start off with two giant action sequences. Moses being put in a basket.
The terrible basket.
And sailing. Oh, yes. The CGI basket that moves like.
You know what? For its time, I'll give it to him.
No. When I first saw this, I didn't even notice. But Moses gets put in the basket, unlike in the book of the Exodus, where it's a calm river that he slowly floats down until he's found by the Pharaoh's daughter. It is what?
It is a nightmare.
It is a raging torrent.
He's going down the river, then there's a crocodile, then there's a heap of hippos.
A heap of hippos.
Then there's some boats. And then
would you say they were hungry, hungry hippos?
Yes. That's what that game is based off of, don't you know? It's Moses' story.
I would say that each marble in Hungry, Hungry Hippos represents a Hebrew child being dropped into the river.
But they were eaten by alligators.
They were. Crocodiles.
Crocodiles.
Thank you very much. And then he gets picked up by a fisherman's net.
And then drop back in the water.
And drop back in the water. It's a whole Six Flags ride for Moses. While his mom is singing a song that will come back. So he's found not by Pharaoh's daughter, but by Pharaoh's wife, played by Helen Mirren. We should note that Val Kilmer plays the voice of Moses throughout this movie. He's found by Pharaoh's wife, who's like, here's our new son. And Pharaoh's like,
okay.
Tight.
That part doesn't work.
And they also, this is where they start really cutting out the presence of Miriam as far as like...
Because Miriam stayed with...
Yeah.
She was like a serving, like a slave.
She kind of sticks around. She's like his, And in this, she's just like...
A child.
One day you'll let our people go, Moses!
And we're going to trust them to tell you where you're from for some reason?
But they do. So that's the other thing. Moses is raised, in the Bible, he is raised knowing who he is. He's a Hebrew, being raised in the household of Pharaoh. That's his story. It's no secret that to him... But for the movie's sake, they make that a revelation later on. So you get this sort of dramatic moment where Moses realizes that these slaves he's been mistreating are actually his people.
Yeah. There's a few things in this movie. I like this movie. I think it's very fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fast, which is fine.
Which is
but
fine.
There's so many really intense emotional sequences that have no build-up.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, oh, and suddenly he's upset about this because something, something, something. I'm like, where?
They also have Moses be given a slave girl as a concubine, I guess.
Which is...
And then she ends up being his wife later on. He helps her escape. And that's not in this original story, but that's Zipporah.
Zipporah.
Who looks great.
She looks great. I love her character design.
Looks kind of like, looks not unlike... the role of what's her face, Demi Moore's character in Hunchback of Notre Dame. They have her really done up as like, sort of like sexy dancer.
Esmeralda,
is that her name? I can't. Yeah, I think so. They really have her. She looks great the whole movie. He never gets a smudge of dirt on her. Never ages. Apparently, like you see lines appear on Moses's face.
I feel
Aaron's
like that's
face.
More stressed.
Right. Moses is a little stressed. He does kill a man.
He does, but that also happens in the Bible.
On screen.
Or not in the Bible. In
You can say the Bible.
That's the only I can never remember the other books' names.
Well, you can say it in the Torah. In the Torah, in the Book of Exodus, he does kill a slave driver.
I did look up how that happened.
Yes.
And the consensus seems to be he punched him once and then they died. He punched him in the face and then buried him in the sand, and then later on he discovered that that was known about because a couple of the slaves were like, are you going to kill us? Like you did that taskmaster.
Yes.
Or whatever. The Google AI response was he stabbed him with his own knife. And I was like, what?
What? Now, I wonder if that happens in Ten Commandments. I wonder if that happens in the movie, The Ten Commandments. So they handle this differently. He pushes him off a scaffolding in front of everyone.
Because he still killed the guy because he was beating up a slave in the story. But in the movie, it's an accident.
In the movie, it's a total accident. And then he's ashamed of what he's done. And so he flees the land of Egypt, goes to Midian, which is what Moses does in the Bible. He's stopped momentarily in the movie by Miriam and Aaron, who Miriam, as you said, I don't know what your plan was here.
Because he runs after Zipporah when he helps her escape. And she gets some water from Miriam and Aaron and then leaves, and he gets stopped by Miriam before he can go after her. And Miriam's like, you've come back to us. And he's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then she keeps insisting and he gets upset, and Aaron is trying to make her stop because that's dangerous. And she doesn't stop, and then she starts singing.
Starts singing a Stephen Schwartz hit that Moses recognizes from when he was first born.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, of course, God would make that happen.
Yeah.
And he realizes that he was adopted, which is the worst. And then he has a dream about hieroglyphics coming to life and chasing each other. And they recreate the opening scene of the movie, which we've already seen. But Moses...
It's also prophetic.
It is.
Because he's being chased by the army as well.
He's being chased by the army. Leading him to the part of his house that I guess he's never been in before, which is the giant mural on the wall of his father feeding Hebrew babies to the crocodiles.
Yep. Because the movie opens with them going in and like grabbing children and stuff.
Yeah.
It is a huge mural.
It's gigantic.
It is bigger than our house.
Yes. And it's like, it's that whole thing of just like, I don't think I've ever been in this room before.
And also, why did you make a mural this big about it?
Or Moses has just never really thought about it. He's like, okay, the mural of my father feeding Hebrew babies to the crocodiles wasn't symbolic. That's like a thing.
No, it's just what happened.
That's a thing. It's way less representative. It's way more representative of physical reality than anything else in Egyptian hieroglyphics.
And his father comes out and is like, ah, yes, it was a shame to have to kill all of those children, but you know, sacrifices must be made, son, come here.
So his reasoning is the same as in the Bible, which is that the Hebrews start multiplying too much for his comfort. And so he's like, we'll kill all the babies who were born around this time. Just get rid of them. And that's why Moses was sent up the river by his mother who wanted to save the baby. That's why he was put on the river. And he starts having a crisis of identity, an identity crisis.
I mean, who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't if you find out your father's a mass murderer?
And also not your father.
Also not your father. You were lied to your whole life. Again, doesn't happen in the Bible that way. But he runs off to Midian, where he, just like in the Bible, he meets Jethro, who's a priest of the Midianites. He finds out that Zipporah was the slave he freed.
First, he saves three girls from brigands.
He does. He does.
By sending camels after them.
No, he doesn't send their camels. He looses the camels.
Oh, sending them after their camels. Sending them after their camels. He sends the camels after them.
Which happens. There's the scene of the girls at the well and Moses stopped to cry. I believe in the Bible they were just being harassed.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, cut it out. Falls in love with Zipporah, gets the blessing of the father.
That was my favorite song, I think, was that whole sequence.
Yep. Brian Stokes Mitchell sings a song. Danny Glover plays Jethro. They dance around. You were all worried we're going to have to see a scene of Jethro dying, but we don't. In fact, I'm going to ask, does Jethro die in the Bible? No.
Just kind of disappears, like a lot of characters in the Bible do.
So Moses works for Jethro in the Bible for 40 years before returning to Egypt.
I don't think 40 years passed in this movie.
I don't. They're very vague. Yeah, yeah. His wife Zipporah, not a woman in her late 60s by the time we get to them. That's one thing I noticed about this movie a lot is that a lot of our supporting characters, Jethro, Miriam, Zipporah, Aaron especially, just. They're cut out of the... They're cut. I mean, they're in it, but Aaron is... So, Moses finds the burning bush.
It's a really fun scene.
It's a great scene.
He gets his mission. He's like, hey, man, why me? And God is like, because.
Because.
Because I said so.
Or he says more like, why are you asking me? I am God!
And Moses is like, listen, bro.
Moses cowers in the corner, and God's like, it's cool, baby, it's cool. It's
God
all good.
Is... intense in this movie. I really like how they do God in this movie. I understand that you're speaking to like an extraplanar entity who you worship and revere as like the best thing in the world or out of the world, I guess, but also you don't have to let him talk to you like that, man.
So one of my issues with this movie is that, and I understand this is a children's movie, it's a family movie, this is not a movie of theology. This is a movie of a mythical character who we're sort of beefing up his story a little bit. We're turning it into a dramatic story. One of my issues though is that they don't differentiate between the gods of Egypt, the gods of the Midianites, the god that Moses finds in the wilderness, because we don't get a sense that the Hebrews are descendants from Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, all of that. Because Joseph was Pharaoh's right-hand man for a long time. But by this time, hundreds of years have gone by, and we've kind of forgotten about that. And there's been corruption in the leadership, and the Hebrews that Joseph brought to the land of Egypt are now slaves. And that's like, there's a little history that we've forgotten. But the thing that we lose a little bit is that people just simply refer to God in this movie. They're like, God did this. Why? God has never listened to us before. And I'm like, this is a different guy. This wilderness God, this God of the shepherds, this God of that sort of trapped in this land and that Moses has to bring out with him, who scares, kind of freaks Moses out, but is also like, I need these followers. I am the God who came out with these people and then got forgotten about. You got to bring me back. You got to beef me up again. I feel like a little bit of that gets lost.
Okay, this is a message to God, not whatever people actually believe in. But in this movie, you can turn into a giant pillar of fire. Why? You didn't really seem to need anybody's help to do that.
Well, that's the thing. I think we could have done a little more of... And I think it's a very humble presence when he first meets it. It's this little burning bush. The further along he gets, the more followers he gets, the more he's reconnected to his people, the more powerful he gets. Finally, Moses gets all the people together, and that's when he can turn into the pillar of fire. I don't know how you would say it in... How would you put it in D&D terms? I'm not sure. This entity that needs followers.
I can't put it in D&D terms, like canon D&D terms, but I can put it in my campaign D&D terms. Okay. There's beings in my campaign called Anima, and they're basically not personifications, but they are beings that are a concept of a thing, and the more people believe in them, the more power they get. And they're formed by what people believe they're able to do.
And I don't think there's anything sacrilegious or anything in saying that. The Bible is very clear that this is an entity that exists alongside all these other entities and that needs to is like, dude, you've kind of dumped me in the wilderness, and now no one's around, and I need your help.
And all I have is this bush.
Right. It's sort of like he's like been reduced down to this one thing.
It's like a warlock. I can't not call Moses a warlock in this movie. He's just a warlock.
He's a warlock in this movie.
Because he is the sort of conduit of power that this other extraplanar being is using to influence the world.
Yes.
And the stronger that Moses gets, the more like influence he gets, the more influence this other being gets, and the more power they have.
And so Moses is like, how can I do this? And in the movie, the voice of God says, I'll be with you, don't worry about it. And I'm giving you this magic staff. I'm turning your staff into a magical God staff. I've imbued your tool with magic. It's got powers. Now in the Bible, he says, don't worry about it. Your brother Aaron will be there mm-hmm. too. And this is where we really separate the story a lot, because Aaron's a huge figure in the story of the Exodus. Aaron is essentially the beginning of the priest class, which is controversial because there's followers of the priests, there's followers of like a non-priest-based religion. Mm-hmm. A lot of people believe that later writers worked Aaron into the story more to like sort of beef up the authority of
the priests. Because he kind of disappears once they get to the wilderness, except for I think I read that he was the one who was like doing the golden calf stuff.
Right. So Moses relies on Aaron, though, to be his speaker, his mm-hmm. voice. So God relies on Moses to be his voice. Moses relies on Aaron to be his voice. Because Moses speaks with a stutter in the Bible. He's like, I stammer, I'm slow of speech. And God's like, don't worry, Aaron will be there. Instead, they turn Aaron into kind of the sort of like skeptic.
I don't really see it that way.
Okay.
So mostly just because I think, for me, Aaron is the more sympathetic character in this movie. I find him more like Miriam kind of irritated me. I find Aaron a more sympathetic character because he's like, hey, this guy kind of was the one oppressing us. And also why, like, he's effed up now. He got the Pharaoh upset at us and we have more work. And, you know, it's been a long time, we've been suffering, and supposedly this guy's just going to make everything better, but he's making it worse, and I don't want them hurt. It's more, in the beginning of this movie, we see the horse chase scene. There's a horse chase scene where Ramses and Moses are competing, and at the beginning of that, Moses slams into Ramses's carriage, and then Ramses tries to do the same thing, but Moses, like, pulls back. It felt more like that dynamic. The beginning of the movie, Moses feels more like the cautious one in a weird way, even though he's clearly not. That one scene stood out to me just because it was so out of character for the rest of how he was for that whole segment. So Aaron, to me, felt more like that sort of cautious, careful figure.
Oh, he's definitely more pragmatic. And he's played by Jeff Goldblum, doing his Jeff Goldblumist. This is our second appearance by Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, and first one is The Fly.
The Fly. Very different character.
Very, both trying to make the world a better place.
Aaron never starts screaming at Miriam about the flesh.
No.
You don't understand the flesh! You don't know it! Never happens.
No.
For dramatic purposes, what they've done is they've taken, so in the book of Exodus, Moses, after 40 years, shows back up in Egypt, consults, I mean, he's had all this time now to consult with Aaron to sort of build a group of followers. They sort of go and present themselves to Pharaoh. Moses already has his retinue behind him. He has Aaron as his speaker. He has the experts in the field. He has Jethro. He has all these people. The movie is like, no, Moses is doing this alone. He's completely isolated.
Except for his wife, who comes with him.
His wife hangs out with him, but he speaks to the Pharaoh alone. He says, let my people go. It's very isolated. I understand why they do that for dramatic reasons. Mm-hmm. This is very much about Moses accepting who he is, separating himself from this toxic family that he grew up with.
But like, they're obviously awful people.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Slave owners, murderers,
whatever. Not a toxic family.
To me, it's like,
I feel like, given, obviously you should tell your child if they're adopted, just because it brings more trauma later on if you don't. But they genuinely, the dad, it's the context of the times, though, again. It's that whole thing, like, you have to look at it through there. Because the dad is really harsh on Ramses because he's his heir and he doesn't want a weak heir. The mom is, I wish she had a bigger role.
She did, yeah. They really. I mean, she has a bigger role than she does in the Bible.
Yeah. The mom seems fine. It's Ramses and Moses, I don't feel like, have a toxic relationship initially.
But to me, it's that thing of, like, my family's very loving. My family's very kind. They've always been supportive of me.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm looking at their politics and realizing they're absolutely horrible people. I kind of got to cut ties with them.
Well, yeah. I'm saying growing up, I don't think necessarily he had a toxic family.
Yeah, no. I don't think he had a toxic relationship mm-hmm. with his family. I think they are a toxic family.
Like, I think
they are bad people.
Toxic people.
Yes, they're toxic people. They are the pharaohs of Egypt. Moses goes back. He says, let my people go. This is where we start getting the signs and wonders. He turns his staff into a snake. That doesn't impress him much.
Because they have smoke and mirrors.
Because Martin Short and Steve Martin, as the magicians, the court magicians, and this does happen in the Bible, are like, we can do the same thing. They're like, we can do the same thing. In fact, we'll sing a bad song about it. You're playing with the big boys now.
That song doesn't make any sense.
The playing with the big boys now.
But the intro to that song is awesome.
The intro is incredible. But yeah, they do smoke and mirrors. They're like, we can do magic tricks too. He turns the river into blood. They're like, look, we can turn things into blood too with our magical powders. It doesn't impress anyone. That's where we start getting the 10 plagues. Now, in the Bible, Moses goes to Pharaoh. He says, let my people go. What does Pharaoh do in the Bible? He says,
no.
No, he says, okay.
Oh, he does?
Pharaoh's like,
okay.
Then God hardens Pharaoh's heart, and Pharaoh's like, no. And that's in the first plague. Then Moses goes back, and he's like, now you let my people go? And Pharaoh's like, and then God hardens his heart.
Okay, pause. Why?
Because God has a point to make. That's a lot of what God has to do in the especially in the Torah, is I'm going to manipulate things behind the scene. Because I've got to prove, not just to the Egyptians that I'm a badass, but to my people that I'm a badass. And in order to prove to my people that I'm a badass, I've got to kill.
Okay, in the Bible, Moses is even more of a warlock, apparently.
Why?
Because that's just what warlock patrons do.
Okay.
They manipulate their followers into doing things for them by playing on what they believe needs to be done and manipulate things behind the scenes. So God is just a warlock patron is what I'm hearing.
God hardens Pharaoh's heart repeatedly in order to move the pieces in the place where Moses can lead his people out of Egypt. If it was too easy, if it was too easy to get out of Egypt, I think that the people wouldn't have followed Moses, or maybe they would have. I don't know. What my question is, what if Pharaoh had been like, I hear what you're saying. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to stop mistreating the Hebrews. They're all going to get on salary. What if he had done that? What if instead of being like, yes, you can run off to the wilderness and scrape and starve out in the wilderness, or we can sign contracts. You guys can be my workforce. I'll get rid of the slave drivers. We'll put you up. We'll put you on salary. I'll give you nice places to live. What if Pharaoh had done that?
That would have been probably ideal.
I mean, yeah.
Well, okay, but there's also the systemic problem of these were an oppressed group of people, and that doesn't just go away because somebody's getting paid.
Somebody's getting paid. Right, but what if that had happened, and then the Hebrews had been like, no, that's a pretty sweet deal. Like, we don't have to go anywhere.
That's what human nature is.
I think that's what happened in America.
What happened in America.
And things didn't work out very well, so maybe it was probably best that the Hebrews did be. So we get the song, The Ten Plagues.
Yes, which is awesome.
Which is awesome.
And has the lead into the best scene in the movie.
However, can I give you a however?
There's fire that falls from the sky.
Fire falls from the sky. I wish the Ten Plagues had been a bigger part of the movie.
I do too.
They sort of brush past them.
You
really
can't
fast.
Brush past the Ten Plagues of Egypt.
And they do them in a weird order. They also have fire raining down from the sky.
Fire doesn't rain down from the sky. It's supposed to be hail.
It's supposed to be hail.
I guess fire is more cinematic.
But you know what the opposite of hail is?
Fire.
Hey, you know what hail actually is?
Fire.
It's water and ice. It's not fire. Hail is not fire. Hail is water and ice.
Water and ice falling on Egypt in the middle of the desert is more detrimental to Egypt than fire, though.
But they also have, like, fireballs destroying all the monuments and stuff and, like, smashing up the palace.
Maybe that was just people throwing fireballs.
Or maybe it was totally unrelated.
It was totally unrelated.
This is other thing that happened.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty cool sequence.
Yeah.
But the coolest sequence
is it goes dark.
Right. We get darkness.
We get Moses asking Ramses, hey, let my people go. The next thing that's going to happen, nobody wants to happen. Ramses seems like he's considering it, and then his son comes out and is like, why is the evil man here?
Daddy, why is that bad man here, and why is it so dark? And where is Ramses' son standing?
Between the crocodiles eating the babies, a mural.
Yes, he's like, Daddy, this really scary mural that you have in the house.
And then there's like a whole scene where Ramses does the pose for, does the pose that his dad is making in the mural and blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 blah.
And then we get...
And Ramses threatens...
He doesn't threaten, he commands the death of all Hebrew people.
Yes, he's like, there will be a great Kai will go up through Egypt, which is actually what it says in the Bible after the final plague, which is...
Death of the firstborn.
Right, so...
Which has the best sequence.
It's an incredible sequence. It doesn't really pull any punches.
No.
Most terrifying way you can represent the angel of death
is by having a giant crack open in the sky and then a big white light come down and start weaving its way through the city.
But it's a real eldritch crack.
It is
in the sky.
Eldritch crack.
As I said,
in the
we were
sky.
Watching it. It would not have surprised me if Azathoth had just sort of come through this opening in the heavens, like tentacles had come out. That's what
honestly,
it looked like.
Honestly, in the eldritch entity sort of thing, the angel of death, as you said while we were watching, is a being that God cannot control.
Right. Biblically speaking, so in the Bible, what happens is God sends the angel of death down. It doesn't come himself. He sends something called the angel of death. And he's like, I can't control this thing.
Sounds like a great old one.
Yeah. What you need to do is you need to slaughter a lamb, sacrifice a lamb, paint the posts and the lintel of your door with blood, this lamb's blood, because otherwise the angel of death is... I can't just tell it to avoid the Hebrews. It's going to come into your house and kill your firstborn if it's not there. And I've always loved that there is this entity that God is just like, I'm just going to set this thing loose, and you've got to have done this ritual, this magic, in order to repel it. And they really do a good job at showing, A, the angel of death in the movie is not dark at all. It's just bright light. And I love it. It's so creepy. And then you see it avoiding the houses. Well, literally passing over. He says, they will pass. This is the Passover. The angel of death passes beyond those houses, but then it sneaks into the houses that don't have it.
There's one moment where there's like a kid bringing in like a thing of water and he goes into the house and then you see the thing go in and then there's a pause and you just hear the smash of the pot breaking against the ground and you see his hand
and
fall
then his
out
arm
of the...
falls out. But you hear, there's a sound effect every time a child dies and it's this this breath of like their soul leaving their body. It's not violent.
I think the most disturbing one was the mom sleeping in bed with her two kids and then
you just hear
the boy just goes still.
Yeah, you just hear and you hear this. It's that like sort of gentle. Like, it's just this release. It's not dramatic, but it's terrifying. This sense of, like... And then it happens, and then you see the light. The angel of death goes to the palace. You hear a few breaths, and then the next thing you know, Pharaoh is carrying the dead body of his boy. The little boy we just saw on the scene carries him to a little, to lay him in wait.
And for some reason, Moses has decided...
Moses thinks this is a good idea to show up. He's like,
just
hey,
leave at that point.
Let my people go.
And Ramses is like, fine.
Fine, get out. And Moses tries to put his hand on Ramses' shoulder.
Why?
And Ramses is like, you know what? No. You know what? No. Get out.
Get out. And so they all leave. There's a happy, happy song.
We all singing and dancing. We do get Miriam and Zipporah sing this song as they leave, which is the closest we get to Miriam's song of celebration, which happens after the next bit. So they journey out. We don't hear anything about they didn't even give them time for their bread to rise. Don't get any of that. I was pretty ticked off. I wanted at least one person to be like, but my bread. And they're like, no time, baby.
That would have been awesome.
Get out.
They walk. They get to the coast of the Red Sea or the Sea of Reeds. And
it's huge. It's a
huge
big sea.
It's massive. You can't see across it. And behind them, suddenly, is a whole heap of soldiers, because by what the Egyptians believe, they did just murder all of their firstborn children.
That's true.
So...
That's true. And it is that thing where, like, Pharaoh says, fine, leave. And then God finally, one last time, hardens his heart, and he sends his soldiers out to kill these people he just freed. It is a weird thing to do as a king, but you get it. You're like, they're pretty ticked off.
As they come over the hill, the Hebrew people are like, oh, crap. And then God becomes a giant pillar of fire.
Mm-hmm. Gets between Pharaoh and the Hebrews.
And the Hebrews. And Moses has a really, really long, unnecessarily long, dramatic scene where he's walking into the water. And he puts the staff down, and then we get the greatest cinematic moment in history mm-hmm. as the waves. That's awesome animation.
Yeah.
Sea parts. Mm-hmm. And everyone is like, that's terrifying. And Darren is like, no, it's fine. I'm going to go first.
It doesn't just part. It shoots up into the sky.
It shoots up into the sky.
So you have these giant canyon walls of mm-hmm. moving water. And that's when you really get an idea of how long of a walk it is across the Red Sea.
190 miles.
190 miles. As you noted, in the Bible, it's actually the Sea of Reeds.
Which I Googled, and it says that the Red Sea is just the Sea of Reeds.
It's very confusing.
But it also says that the Sea of Reeds is somewhere else, so...
Right. There, again, this is a myth. This mm-hmm. is mythology. This is word of mouth. This was all written down. There's some contradictory stuff in it. The point is, God creates a miracle that allows the Hebrews to leave. The Pharaoh and his men... Eventually, the pillar of fire comes down. Pharaoh and his men charge into the sea after them, and...
They get drowned.
They get canceled. We do get an awesome shot while they're walking with the walls of water on either side of them.
I wanted a giant sea monster to come out of the waves.
We see a whale.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many blue whales there are in the Red Sea.
First, we don't see a whale. We just see a giant silhouette of an actual fish.
Right.
Because... That's not a whale silhouette. I'm going to say that right now.
Maybe it's a sunfish.
Sunfish are pretty cool. They're sunfish pretty are rounder.
Yeah, it could have been from a weird angle. But then we see a whale.
But then we see a whale. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. And I wanted it to breach the water and go across. But whales wouldn't do that. So yeah.
You wanted to see more eldritch abominations.
I wanted to see Cthulhu.
Where's Leviathan?
Come on.
Where's Dagon? We're talking about different gods here. Let's get some real eldritch gods up in this mess. The walls come crashing down, drown, we think Pharaoh and his men, but Pharaoh is spared.
We don't actually know that, though.
We see him. He's on the rock at the end.
Do we see him, or do we see what Moses is imagining?
We see him because, obviously, Egypt keeps going for a while.
Well, even if Pharaoh and his men didn't drown...
Well, his men drown.
Even if Pharaoh didn't drown... He would die because he's in the middle of a 190-mile sea, and all of his men are dead.
Someone's going to come looking for him.
No one's going to come looking for him because all of his men are dead.
So the movie ends with Moses and his friends all walking out into the wilderness.
Actually, I like to think that there were a couple of the Pharaoh's men who were like, I'm not going in there.
Right, right. Look at the walls. This guy's already created a pillar of fire. He created the snakes, and now the walls. I don't trust this.
No.
We see Moses, a little flash forward to Moses coming down from Mount Sinai with the tablets, with the Ten Commandments. He's standing there. We don't see what he sees, which is people worshiping a golden calf. Movie ends there. But then post-credits, we do get a little post-credits joy.
We do.
Which is?
I don't remember.
It's three quotes about Moses.
Oh, that's right. We get three quotes about Moses, each from the three Abrahamic faiths.
Abrahamic faiths. We get a quote about Moses from the Torah. We get a quote about Moses I think it's not the Gospels. It's from the letters of Paul. And we get a quote about Moses from the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
It's our filmmakers being like, it's for everyone.
Except for the Aaronites.
It's right. And the Aaronites are still pissed. The Aaronites got folded into modern day Judaism. It doesn't matter. It does matter. It matters a lot. But this was sort of the story of Moses.
It was sort of the story of Moses.
This movie won an Oscar. Best song for one of the songs.
Was it the Ten Plagues?
It was not the Ten Plagues. I think the one that Miriam and Zipporah sang.
When You Believe.
When You Believe.
Steven Schwartz is very sorry that he cannot be here. He's in rehearsals for a show in New York. But he wishes to express his gratitude to the members of the Academy. Thank you.
Is that the song that they sang?
Well, it's a duet because apparently Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey did a version of it.
Yeah, but I think it's the song that the two women sing mm-hmm. in the movie. There was just this cover of it.
No, I know.
Yeah. This movie was made for $60 million. It went on to a box office of $218. It was a big hit. The voice of God, we mentioned, was originally recorded with all the cast members whispering his lines. They couldn't hear it well enough, so they brought Val Kilmer's voice mm-hmm. out to the forefront. So it really sounds like Val Kilmer. I remember in the movie theater, it was a lot with surround sound. it was a lot more like this, the voice is kind of whirling around you.
Yeah.
So you lose a little bit of that if you're watching it at home, unless you have a good surround sound system.
Which we don't.
So it was, yeah, good reception. Critics liked it. Audience liked it. Yeah, and it's gone on.
It was banned in the Maldives, Malaysia, and Egypt, and all state Islam countries on the grounds that Islamic prophets who conclude Moses are not to be visually depicted. Okay, fair enough.
Yes.
It's also banned in Indonesia.
Right. But was later released on a VCD, in VCD format. But I also remember when this movie was coming out that there was controversy over the fact that the entire cast's voices were still present in The Voice of God, because there were some sects that were offended that there were women's voices mixed in with The Voice of God. I don't remember from whom. I don't remember if it was Jewish sects or Muslim or who.
There's a lot of, like, film critiques and cultural critiques that I'll accept from various things. Just like, okay, yeah, that's, you know what, fair enough. That's not one of them.
So this was nominated for Best Original Song, which it won. It was nominated for Best Original Musical or Comedy Score, which it did not win. It was nominated for a bunch of Annie Awards, which it did not win. It won Critics' Choice Movie Awards for Best Song and Best Animated Feature.
Didn't it tie? It said somewhere that it tied with, like, Bug's Life or something.
Yeah, yeah. It was up against Pixar.
Mm-hmm. The fact that it won stuff is pretty impressive.
It won some stuff. And Aria Curzon won Best Artist, Best Young Artist at the Young Artist Awards.
Aria Curzon. She did Ducky in the Land Before Time.
She was Ducky in the Land Before Time franchise. She was Teresa in Recess.
Hey, she was in something in the for the Odyssey.
Adventures in Odyssey.
Yeah.
Which is an ultra-Christian right-wing
yikes
children's show, but that many famous popular people have been part of because its production value is so high. This movie was followed up in 2000 with Joseph, King of Dreams, which went direct-to-video, which told the story of Joseph, played by Ben Affleck, the prettiest Joseph on screen at that point. Who else was in that movie? Mark Hamill? Huh? Marie McGovern?
Jodie Benson?
Judith Light?
James Eckhouse?
Again, a lot of not Jewish...
Richard McGonagall,
known for playing Orlovsky in World in Conflict, Soviet Assault. There's a stage musical of Prince of Egypt, which you don't hear much about, but it was adapted from this. A lot of the same songs, wrote some extra songs for it. 2017 production, done in Utah, done on the West End.
Was it done by Mormons?
I'm sure it was done by Mormons.
It's Utah, yeah.
But yeah, it's got a lot more songs, but all the same songs. You can get a cast recording of that. And as we said up top, Guillermo del Toro really likes this movie.
He says so much about it.
But Guillermo del Toro always loved animation.
Mm-hmm. And this is tech-wise, like, the way that they do things in this movie, I don't necessarily even need to understand why he might like the plot to understand why he would like the way that this is animated.
Yes. It's beautifully animated. Mm-hmm. The character design is wild. If I remember correctly, the design for this...
That's the musical.
Hold on. Animation to design. Yes. The film's look was inspired by Claude Monet.
Okay.
And David Lean for the composition of the scenes. They wanted it to look epic, but also painterly.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie came out, won some awards, didn't win some awards. People liked it. Didn't have a lot of merchandise because they were like, we don't want
to... That would be a weird movie to merchandise.
We don't want too much merchandise. So, yes, that's right. There was a Nashville soundtrack and an inspirational soundtrack with, like, religious music. Like
a country, the country-themed Nashville soundtrack and gospel-based inspirational soundtrack.
Yes. The country-themed Nashville soundtrack, which featured Alison Krauss, Pam Tillis, Vince Gill, Minda McCready, Faith Hill, Reba McEntire, Clint Black, Alabama, Mac McNally, and Charlie Daniels, and Toby Keith himself singing I Can't Be a Slave. Guess what, Toby Keith? I don't think you were ever in any danger of being a slave.
A weird movie to do themed soundtracks for.
But I mean, that was kind of the thing at the time. I see the weirdest moment in this movie, hearing Sandra Bullock's voice say, I have been a slave all my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, because this cast, Val Kilmer, Ralph Fiennes, Michelle Pfeiffer, Sandra Bullock, Danny Glover, Patrick Stewart, Helen Mirren, Steve Martin, Martin Short, the least Jewish cast. You have Jeff Goldblum as Aaron, the only... I believe,
that's why Aaron was the way he was.
The only Jewish cast member in all of this. But that was Hollywood at the time. But a very Jewish produced film. I mean, it was DreamWorks. It was a Jewish production. And if you think that's not a big deal, ask yourself, would that be a big deal if this was any other culture's origin story being portrayed on film? Would you say you didn't need Jewish, or if you don't think you would need Jewish actors in this, would you need people who represent that culture in any other story about that? Ask yourself that question. That's the question. Again, though, late 90s, we weren't really doing that at the time.
No.
But if it was made today, I would hope that they would cast a little more believably. Yeah.
And also write better songs.
But it was Patrick Stewart as the Pharaoh Seti. So all is forgiven. What did Seti really look like? Oh, that's what he really looked like. He really didn't look like that guy. They made him look just like the Pharaoh. So, there's his mummy. Kind of looks like Patrick Stewart, the mummy of Pharaoh.
No.
The mummy of Seti. He's bald. He's got that jawline. I believe it. So, anyway, that was Prince of Egypt.
It was.
That was the Prince of Egypt. You know, for all my faults with it, I still give it a thumbs up.
I would too. I mean, it is a phenomenally made film. And also, it's very fun.
And if you have a 4K player and good sound and everything, there's a 4K that's been released. Pick it up. I have the 4K, but I can't watch 4K, so I watch the Blu-ray. It's got making of documentary. It's got feature commentary with the directors. So, you know, give that a listen too. What's next on our list?
The Big Lebowski.
Hey, man.
I have no idea what this film is.
The Big Lebowski?
I've heard so many people talk about it. I've heard so many people say things about it or quote things from it. I have no idea what the film is.
I'm happy that you don't, because The Big Lebowski is an experience. Should we drink White Russians while watching it?
Is that alcoholic?
Yes, very.
I haven't actually had, I've had alcohol, but not enough to, like, do anything. Because I got distracted by watching movies.
There is a canned White Russian that I love so much.
Does it taste like alcohol?
No, it tastes like the sweetest dream.
Oh, that's right. You talked about that last
time. White Russians are a big part of The Big Lebowski. I can't wait. We love the Coen brothers.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember what movie of theirs did I see.
You saw and liked True Grit.
Yeah, that's right.
So did we watch? Have we watched Coen Brothers? I don't believe we have.
You went through a list.
We went through all of this.
And you said no.
We have not.
I said no, actually.
So this is our first Coen Brothers film. We watched Sam Raimi. That's what I'm thinking
yes.
of. So we watched
Dark Man. Dark Man was so long ago in my life, but it is so recent in our list.
Well, join us next time when we will be watching The Big Lebowski. Maybe we'll watch it on camera.
I'll remember my headphones next time.
Remember your headphones next time. But that's just like your opinion, man. That's a Big Lebowski quote. You're out of your depth, Donnie. That's a Big Lebowski quote. We'll talk about Big Lebowski. We'll talk about the Coen brothers. We'll talk about my history with this movie. I started off not liking it. I love it now. We'll talk about the cast, the cast of thousands. We'll talk about the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. We'll talk about all that because we're coming up on the Big Lebowski. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for watching us talk about the Prince of Egypt.
Moses is a warlock.
Moses supposes his toes were roses, but Moses supposes erroneously. I am Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when it's Del Toro time.
Let me do a caveat to my point. Moses was a warlock in this movie. I can't say that he was a warlock in history because I don't want to upset anybody.
It's all just made up stories, baby.
What is a warlock?
What's a warlock?
Just a man.